This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Last week, the U.S. Supreme Court heard arguments challenging a federal policy that seeks to limit industrial air pollution that crosses state lines. This good neighbor rule, which went into effect last year, is meant to help states achieve better air quality even if they live downwind of other states with high emissions from power plants and other sources. The challenge was brought by lawyers representing three states and several major corporations. They argue that the good neighbor rule is too costly, could cause problems with the electric grid. Supporters of the policy say it's been effective in reducing air pollution, which is harmful to human health, associated with millions of deaths worldwide each year. Our next guest is an expert in environmental law and health sciences. We're taking a look at what this latest Supreme Court challenge could mean for air quality around the country and here in Wisconsin. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Are you concerned about air pollution in Wisconsin? Do you or someone in your family have asthma or health conditions that are affected by local air quality? Do you think the federal government should be more involved in regulating air quality, or should some of these decisions be left up to states? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. Steph Tai is a professor at the UW Law School and associate dean of the Nelson Institute for Environmental Studies. The research examines the interactions between environmental and health sciences and administrative law. Steph, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me, Rob.
Well, as always, when you start to dig into these things, it gets complicated. I want to take one piece at a time. First of all, can you talk a little bit about the good neighbor concept when it comes to federal regulation of air pollutants?
Yeah, the idea is to address the fact that air doesn't stay in one state. So if you emit a pollutant, it's going to circulate. And it usually circulates from upwind states to downwind states. The Clean Air Act has a lot of provisions for each state controlling its air pollution, but it doesn't. Those other provisions don't really help when most of the air pollutants are coming from some other state. So the good neighbor provision is designed to do that, to address what happens when you have cross-state air pollution that may affect the health of another state, but is not actually created by that state itself.
Now, in this particular challenge to EPA rulemaking, the pollutants in question here are chemical emissions that cause ozone formation. Can you talk a little bit about why that is a concerning kind of pollution that we worry about?
Yeah, so there's many health effects that are associated with ozone pollution and also fine particulate pollution, which is also something that's being controlled by the cross-state air pollution rule. And the problem with these types of pollutants is that, one, it can sort of exacerbate anyone with asthma, having, sort of leading to even more additional effects. But also, some of the fine particulate matter pollution and also ozone pollution have been connected to neurological effects, has been connected to lower educational scores on tests, and also has increased the frequency of miscarriages. So there's a lot of different types of health effects that can arise out of these sorts of pollutants.
Okay, those are a couple of the basics. Now tell us about the EPA rule under this good neighbor concept on ozone that's being challenged in the courts, a little of the history and what it was trying to do.
Yeah, so I have to sort of unpack the Clean Air Act itself. So what the Clean Air Act does, it sets forth a number of different sort of national ambient air quality standards, basically standards for certain types of pollutants, or allows the EPA to set forth certain national ambient air quality standards. So these are standards for level of pollutants that all states have to hit. Now, it doesn't tell the states how to do that. What it does is that the states can go through and design their own implementation plan. So what that means is that, a state can choose to support one type of industry over another type of industry, so long as whatever it does, according to the EPA, actually helps hit the national ambient air quality standards. Now, the problem with that is, right, a state can have a great state implementation plan, but as I mentioned before, it could be a neighboring state that is actually leading to the initial state not meeting those national ambient air quality standards. So what the Clean Air Act also allows the EPA to do is to create a cross-state air pollutant rule that ends up substituting for certain kinds of features a federal implementation plan in order for those downwind states to reach their national ambient air quality standards. And that's what's being challenged here. The rule sets out requirements for 23 upwind states to meet their obligations under the Clean Air Act not to contribute to downwind states' violation of these health-based standards. And it sets forth basically a phase-in of certain types of technologies that must be adopted.
As I understand it, Steph, Wisconsin is on both sides of this. We are subject to this EPA rule, one of those 23, I think, states you just mentioned. But also we're victims as a downwind state as we try to solve our ozone pollution problem here. We're getting some pollution from upwind states. So we're affected on both ends. Do I have that right?
Yep.
So let's get into that challenge now that you mentioned. A lot of states have challenged this in different courts as well as corporations. Tell us a little bit about the challenges and why they jumped up to the U.S. Supreme Court.
So this is unusual for it to jump up to the Supreme Court at this type of stage. Usually these get addressed at appellate court kind of levels. Basically, the Clean Air Act says that any kind of appeal of a rulemaking from the EPA goes to various appellate courts, either the DC circuit or the circuit court where the impacts are being felt. It is very unusual for this to go to the Supreme Court at this kind of stage without any kind of resolution at the appellate court level. My guess is that part of the reason why folks took it to the Supreme Court is they think they have a sympathetic Supreme Court right now, which it seems like, according to the accounts of the oral arguments I've read, it seems like they are fairly sympathetic to the states bringing the challenge.
Talking to Steph Tighe, professor at the UW Law School and associate dean of the Nelson Institute for Environmental Studies, looking at EPA air pollution regulations, the good neighbor rules that say, hey, states, you have to regulate not just when it comes to your own air quality, but what you're sending downwind to neighboring states. You can join in with your questions about all of this, your thoughts on how much authority the federal government should have to regulate air pollution in states. What you want to see from the U.S. Supreme Court, where this ended up. Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Steph, let's dig into the arguments now from the states that are challenging this EPA policy, from the corporations that are challenging it. What are their arguments as to why why the EPA is going too far here?
So they raise two types of arguments. One is just the sort of policy-based argument, which is that this is going to be too costly for them to comply with. But they also raise a legal argument that is fairly unusual. Basically, they're arguing that in setting these standards, the EPA did not consider thoroughly enough what happens if some states, like those states, drop out of the good neighbor provision for reasons of objecting to it. It's unusual because, and I have to backtrack a little bit here.
Sure.
It's unusual because of the process of rulemaking. What happens when any agency issues a rule under the Administrative Procedure Act, they have to put it out for notice and comment. That is, they have to publish a draft rule, and then there's usually 30 or 60 days for people to comment on it. And these states had the opportunity to comment, and none of them raised this at the notice and comment stage. In usual administrative law terms, this would be regarded as having waived that kind of argument, which is why I mentioned that this is fairly unusual that the Supreme Court is hearing this argument that the EPA failed to adequately consider all of the implications of particular states dropping out. They didn't raise that. And if they had raised this at the notice and comment stage, then the EPA would have had in its final rule some more discussion of this. And so in a way, it's kind of like a bait and switch that happened here. And the other thing, too, that is sort of unusual is that under the EPA's method of determining what types of standards to set, it's not particularly dependent on how many states participate in this. It's a technology-based standard based on a national survey of available technologies. And so whether or not they adequately considered what would happen if various states dropped out of participating in the program isn't actually even related to the calculus that the EPA used in setting these standards.
This is about ozone in particular. could this end up affecting other EPA regulations under the Clean Air Act? What else could be at stake here?
So I mentioned this, ozone is also particulate matter, but this is very, so let me backtrack on this a little bit. This particular argument is very isolated to the cross-state air pollution rule, because it's a very different part of the Clean Air Act than the other parts of the Clean Air Act. So I think it's limited in that sense to its ability to regulate cross-state air pollution. However, the fact that the Supreme Court is likely to grant an emergency stay, that sets a precedent for many other types of challenges to other parts of the Clean Air Act and rules under those parts of the Clean Air Act. And so that could have even greater implications for the ability of the EPA to regulate air pollutants.
Steph Tighe is with us, professor at the University of Wisconsin Law School, associate dean of the Nelson Institute for Environmental Studies. We're taking a look at this challenge to the EPA's good neighbor rule to limit ozone air pollution crossing state lines. The U.S. Supreme Court heard it, as Steph mentioned, in kind of a surprising way, waiting to see what they do now. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. What are you hoping to see from the U.S. Supreme Court on this rule that regulates interstate air pollution? Do you have questions for our guest if you're feeling a little confused on this? There's a lot of moving parts. You are not alone if you need some kind of clarification. Do you worry about trends when it comes to the Supreme Court and how it rules on environmental issues in general? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with UW Law Professor Steph Tighe about the U.S. Supreme Court hearing last week on the EPA's good neighbor rule and how it could affect states like Wisconsin that deal with air pollution crossing state lines. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions about the legal and environmental issues at stake here? Are you someone who worries about air quality because of your asthma, or someone in your family with a sensitive condition that makes you vulnerable to air pollution? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. Steph, you never want to read too much into the questioning from Supreme Court justices in any particular case and predict outcomes. That said, given what went down last week at the Supreme Court on this issue, what kind of things did you hear from justices that made you think?
Yeah, I mean, it seems like the justices are really buying into the state's arguments that even though they didn't raise this below, that the EPA's failure to consider what would happen if any states dropped out of the good neighbor provision, they're seeming to think that that's meritorious enough to potentially grant a stay, and that also the stay. So let me backtrack again a bit. So in order to grant a stay, you need to balance two things, right? The sort of public interest, which includes the cost to people, and the likelihood of success on the merits. And so it seems like the Supreme Court is looking at both and saying, okay, well, might you succeed on the merits, even though I personally think this is quite unusual. And then two, that the financial harm that would be done to these states is sufficient to grant a stay. And so on both of those prongs for consideration of whether to grant a stay, at least listening to reading the oral arguments, it does seem like the Supreme Court is ready to rule in favor of Ohio and Indiana and West Virginia.
If the U.S. Supreme Court does that, what happens then? Can the EPA go back to the drawing board, draw up a new set of rules, or what would happen next in that scenario?
Yeah, I mean, they can. That's definitely a possibility. What has been also weird with this particular Supreme Court is that I don't know whether or not that would stop the Supreme Court from still intervening. So let me give an example. So under the Obama administration's Clean Power Plan, this was challenged, then it was taken down by the Trump administration, and then there was no plan in place. The Supreme Court still heard a challenge to the plan somehow in West Virginia versus EPA, even though the Biden administration said, we're not even going to introduce anything like the Clean Power Plan again. So the Supreme Court has demonstrated that it's willing to hear even rules that don't exist, which makes me suspect that even if the Biden administration tries to redo the cross-state air pollution rule, the Supreme Court might still somehow rule on the merits of this rule, which would be really strange, but is not inconsistent with what it did in West Virginia versus EPA.
Now, supposing this rule is in place and stays in place, what kind of things are states needing to do? I know power plants are part of the story, but not all of the story. What kind of changes would be out there to accommodate these rules and say, okay, we're not going to contribute to this ozone pollution in, say, our neighbors to the east?
It's pretty much power plants and putting in certain technological measures in order to address the nitrogen oxides and sulfur dioxide coming from these power plants. So it is really primarily a sort of technological phase in. And it's not like a hard limit. It's done as a phase in so that the emission budgets will decline over time rather than being a state-of-the-art installation right at the immediate part.
And what is the timeline on that phase in?
Nitrogen oxides, it doesn't even start until 2026. I can't remember, unfortunately, the actual timeline of the phase-in, but it's definitely not immediate.
Talking to Steph Tai from the UW Law School and Associate Dean of the Nelson Institute for Environmental Studies, looking at the Supreme Court case heard last week, kind of jumped up through the court system there, looking at EPA regulation of air pollution in states under the good neighbor rule, meaning, hey, are your emissions your state affecting another state? In this case, the pollutant in question is ozone. Still time for your calls with your questions, your thoughts, maybe your experiences if this kind of air pollution is something that affects you personally. Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Steph, looking at the Clean Air Act, I mean, sometimes Congress passes laws that leave some ambiguity for the way that then the executive branch deploys those laws, regulates and enforces them. Is this a case where it would be worth revisiting the Clean Air Act to clarify some of these issues?
Well, So two things. I'm not sure that the issue here involves any kind of matter of clarity in this instance. It's really about a procedure that the states are claiming that the EPA did not follow. So at least with respect to this case, I don't think any additional clarity is necessary. But that said, given the Supreme Court arguments heard earlier this year in two cases known as Loper-Bright and also Relentless, the Supreme Court is revisiting, and nobody really knows what they're going to do with this yet, whether or not an agency gets any deference if it's interpreting an unclear or ambiguous aspect of a statute. So given how the Supreme Court is moving in those two cases, in general, it would be helpful, I think, for Congress to add additional clarity to statutes. Whether or not it actually will in this gridlocked Congress seems unlikely at this time.
Let's bring on a caller. Mary Kay is with us in Kenosha. Mary Kay, hi.
Hi. A while ago, our power plants had scrubbers, and the DNR had monitors where they would monitor the air. Also, the biggest problem we have with ozone is landfills. There's apartment buildings that don't have to recycle. There's businesses. There's even government that doesn't have to recycle. Okay? You can go anywhere. You'll never find two garbage cans. You'll never find one for recycling and garbage. Maybe a library you will. But, I mean, they don't even follow their own rules.
Mary Kay, thanks for the call. Now, first of all, I believe there are still scrubbers in coal plants. A lot of that will take out carbon, greenhouse gas emissions. Is that part of the technology we're talking about when it comes to ozone-causing emissions, stuff?
Yep, pretty much. And the problem with landfills is that that's not something that's really available for federal regulation. That's considered a core state and municipal kind of issue because it's about land use. And so to the extent that the federal government can do much about it, it can issue guidances, it can make recommendations, but it can't really regulate in that area. And the Clean Air Act doesn't give it the authority to do so.
Thanks for that call, Mary Kay, at 800-642-1234. Janet joins us now in La Crosse. Janet, hi.
Hi. Yes. My question and comments that I wanted to ask your guest deal with a number of the environmental laws that have come up in the last few years and the rulings on them. Most recently, now the wetlands laws have been changed, so Fish and Wildlife no longer have as much control, or I believe that's who would have the wetlands. Indiana's leading the way on that. So I'm seeing sort of a continuity going on here with our current Supreme Court, that they're not necessarily looking at what is and what are the mandates.
Gotcha.
But
Janet, we're just about out of time. In just our last minute or so, Steph, what kind of trends are you seeing with the U.S. Supreme Court when it comes to environmental regulation?
Yeah, it seems like they're very skeptical of environmental regulations, and they're more primarily concerned with the cost of complying with environmental regulations versus the health effects and the health benefits that are associated with environmental regulations. And so they're really focused on the sort of industry costs versus some of the very strong public health benefits that also have, you know, monetary benefits. They're not really focused on that.
Janet, thanks for the call. And Steph, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Steph Tighe is a professor at the University of Wisconsin Law School and Associate Dean of the Nelson Institute for Environmental Studies. Been talking about an ongoing U.S. Supreme Court case heard last week. It involves the EPA's Good Neighbor Rule on air pollution that's emitted in one state but causes problems in a downwind state. What it could mean for regulating air quality around the country and here in Wisconsin. You can keep sharing your thoughts. Email ideas@wpr.org. That's ideas@wpr.org.